Hello and welcome to another episode of MetaPsychics. My name is Liv and this is the podcast where we talk about all things paranormal, spiritual, metaphysical, and in between. Because as a psychic medium, these topics intrigue me. Even as not a psychic medium, these topics intrigue me. I've always been excited about like Greek mythology and learning about history and the way people perceived the world and lived their lives in the past. I don't know, it's just I like to learn about things, specifically things that so happen to fall under these categories, I guess. And I think even if I wasn't a psychic medium, I would still just be excited about these things. So that is what this podcast is about. Today, we're going to be talking about the Mandela Effect, which I've wanted to talk about for a while, but I haven't researched it and I only knew about it by like happenstance, I guess. And just like people talking about it in general, but I didn't know the things that I've researched for you all today, or at least a lot of them. And I wanted to tie my research and understanding of the Mandela Effect into a listener's story as well. So if you guys are new to the podcast, we have psychics, which are just listeners of this podcast, send in their own spooky, paranormal, spiritual, metaphysical stories of their own. And I have one to share with you today that we can all talk about and just, I don't know, I don't have an answer for it, but I will give you my perspectives as a person who exists in the world like the rest of you and a person who, I don't know, maybe experiences more spiritual things. As a medium, I don't know. I'll tell you like my perspectives, the things that have happened to me and why I believe what I believe about the Mandela Effect and timelines, things like that, which we've already talked about in past podcasts. But again, like the purpose of this podcast is not to tell you things to make you think a certain way. It's to equip you with the knowledge and understanding of concepts, theories, and ideas in order for you to create and conceptualize your own opinions on such topics as what we're talking about today. So unlike past podcasts where my business partner M and I would talk about like our perception as mediums of the things that are happening in the story, I'm not necessarily going to give an answer because I don't think it's not for me to give an answer. Also, I just simply don't have an answer. And that's something that I've also been trying to embrace personally as a human being and someone who identifies a portion of their existence as a psychic medium. So just someone who channels the energy of souls, living animals, things, plants, etc., to not always being right about everything. Because there's this, I feel personally that there is this sociocultural perception that mediums have to know things all the time and therefore also have to be right. And I'm just trying to say that that's not true. And I think, you know, it's not even just about mediums. It's everybody. If you say that you're professional in something, someone thinks, or I feel like a lot of people could think that you are supposed to know and be the most well-versed and eloquent human being in that section of society or whatever it is that you do, whether it be a plumber or a construction worker or a pharmacist or data analyst, whatever. You know, we are humans and therefore we err. So anyways, that is what we're going to be talking about. But before we get into the Mandela Effect and our listener's story today that is given to us by JG, I'm going to talk about myself because the listeners have asked to hear about myself as a person and the things that I ponder. And if that is something that you don't want to listen to and you just want the listener story and the Mandela Effect, there will be a timestamp in the description below if you're listening on the Metapsychics Extras YouTube channel or in the show notes so that you can click past this and go to the actual core of the podcast. But without further ado, this is my life update. Okay, so what do I want to talk about? Last time we talked about Oak, my son, stomping in onion peels, but I don't know. I feel like I have a little bit more of like a hippy dippy sort of thing that I've been thinking about, which is time. And I guess that kind of goes into today's podcast a little bit too. I don't know. I like when we started Metapsychics, how old was I? That was 4 years ago. I was 23. So I don't know. 23-year-old Olivia, I feel like was very different than now 27-year-old Olivia. I was going through a lot of things in my life. For me, I have my undergrad degree in biology. I wanted to be an equine veterinarian, but after doing like solid hours of vet tech work with a really, really awesome equine vet, I just realized that emotionally for me, I didn't want to pursue another 5-6 years of veterinary school because I didn't think I would really be happy with what I was doing in the climate of veterinary medicine that exists today. So I made the decision to just finish out my bachelor's degree, but that was really, really hard. I had a lot. College was not easy for me for a multitude of reasons. And it took me 5 years to get my college degree instead of 4. And instead of graduating when I was 21, I graduated when I was 22. And by the time I was 22, 23, Em and I had started Metapsychics, and during that time, I was doing so many things. All throughout college, I worked as a receptionist at an automotive dealership because I first worked as a hostess at a restaurant, and then I lost that job. It was really silly. I like made a reservation wrong on a holiday, and then I realized that I had made that mistake. So then I called the family back and was like, hey, I apologize. I can't have your reservation because technically we close an hour before your reservation is supposed to start. That was my own whoopsie doodle. And they're like, oh no, well, we can't go earlier because we're picking up people from the airport. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess after the holiday rush, the people that own the restaurant didn't like that. So then they fired me after I helped them for the holidays. So, you know, if anyone can relate to a story like that out there. But my mother was like, you just need to focus on school. You don't need a job. We'll provide for you. And I was like, that is not how Olivia vibes. So I got a job. And then I was the car receptionist. And it was funny because when I went into that interview, I told the HR guy, I was like, if I can't do my homework while I'm answering phones, then this is not, like, I'm not the person for you. And he's like, nope, you can do your homework. So that is what I did for the rest of the 4 years that I was in school, every single night, and then picking up shifts when I didn't have classes scheduled. And that was at the time when my now husband, then boyfriend, and then fiance, Bradley, and I were living in an apartment together in the city and just working and going to school and figuring out who we were. And then after school was done, I figured out that with a biology degree, the only jobs that I could try and apply for were quality assurance technicians. And I was like, I don't want to be a quality assurance technician. And I'm sorry if you're a quality assurance technician and you love your job. I'm sure it's a fabulous job. It just wasn't what I was thinking about when I graduated from school with a pre-med degree and almost a minor in equine like studies. So I was really frustrated. And I was just trying to get a job that made more money than my part-time job. And I tried to move around in my part-time job at the car dealership to a different position, but the car dealership, their management and people were very set in their what I call good old boy ways. And every time I applied for a position, they were like, well, do you want to work in the general office with the rest of the girls? I was like, no, I've heard how bad it is there. I don't work well with other girls usually because they're catty and I don't know how to deal with it. I don't get the social cues and the subtleties of women. So I ended up taking a different job. That job did not work out. It was absolutely terrible. It was like a lot of things that I had to do, but everything that they gave you to do the jobs with was broken. And then I was like, I can't do this. I had like a terrible, terrible like anxiety attack and quit. And then I had more jobs. And during this whole time is when we started Metapsychics, right? So terrible job with broken things to get things done. Then I worked at an HR firm, and I left that HR firm because they were breaking equal opportunity employment acts. And I was like, I can't be a part of this. So I left and then took a pay cut and worked at Starbucks because my friend worked at Starbucks at the time and they helped me get a job. And then, you know, COVID happened at the HR place. My grandmother died during COVID. Then I was working at Starbucks pre-post COVID, or like not pre, but during and after COVID-ish. And then I got the job where I was working with Emily for a while. And that was just like the job, you know, like the it job, the job that you work for your whole life to try and actually feel like you can breathe job. So that was the years of when, you know, Metapsychic started and just all of the stuff that was going on in my life. You know, it just seems weird that it's been 4 years, but those 4 years also feel like they've gone in like a blink of an eye, but also so like it took so, so long to get here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sure with me talking about all of this stuff right now, you guys are like, oh yeah, I went through this part of my life or this portion of my life. And like, how does time, something that is measurable, but also not, how do you feel about that? You know? And now as a mom and someone who's a wife and married and things like that, I feel like time is passing even faster. But like those last 4 years felt like they took so long. Like it's been like 30 years. I feel like I've aged so much since 22 year old Olivia, which is crazy. You know, like that's just over the age of like being able to have a drink here in America. And then like you're voting and you're paying taxes already, but you like actually have to pay taxes now. It's not just like when you're 18 and you file taxes because you've had a job type of thing. It's like, I don't know. I've been learning that as a child, when you're younger, it seems that time takes forever to pass. Like you just want to grow up. You want to be able to have a car. You want to be able to go to high school. You want to be able to go to college. You want to get your first job, whatever that is. And it takes, feels like it takes forever to get there. And then you enter your like late 20s, early 30s, maybe even early 20s if you had kids a little bit younger than I have. And it just feels like once you have kids or you reach your 30s, that is when time just like hits a wall. And everything goes so much faster, but also like I feel like it just goes so much faster. Maybe it doesn't hit a wall. It's like when you get to the precept of the roller coaster, like right at the top, and then all of a sudden it just starts going downhill. But it's not necessarily downhill. It's just that you've gained that momentum and now you're going through all these twists and turns and you're like, holy crap, what is going on? Who am I? Who was I when I was up on that hill and like just like going up that hill of the roller coaster of life? And now you're like, your cheeks are blown back, your hair's all messed up, someone threw up behind you, you don't know what's going on, a bug hit your eye, and you have like, you don't know what's happening. That's where I'm at right now. But I was able to go to the place that my mom works. She's a nurse. And I took Oak on his birthday to go see my mom where she works, because I've never taken him there. And she works with a lot of elderly people at like a retirement home-ish type thing. And it was so interesting to see all of the people there in relation to how they perceive time. You know, my mom introduced me to this woman who is 97. And my mom said, I love asking her this question, and she answers it every time the same way. And I guess this woman just likes to tell the same stories over and over, which is completely fine. They're new to me. So she's like, let's see if I can get Gertie to give you the same answer every time when I ask her this question. So we walk in, I have Oak. She was all excited to see a baby. And my mom goes, hey, Gertie. She goes, what? She says, how did you get so old? Gertie's reply was, I just wake up every day, I guess. You know what I'm saying? And then there's just been other people in the stories my mom has told me of the people that she works with, like 102, 104. I think 104 is the oldest person my mom's ever met. But just like really, really old people. And she's told me that some of them have even said, like, you know, I'm okay with just like not being alive anymore because I've lived so long. My great-great-grandmother lived to be 93. And she was the person that once she got to that age, she was like, well, I've lived my life. I don't need to live any more of my life because everyone that I was living with is now not here. So, you know, not that I don't like anyone else, but I've just lived my life. So I'm thinking about how the perception of time changes with age to where you feel like time goes so slow when you're a kid. And then you hit that, you have a child or 30s mark and everything seems to just go super, super fast and like gets put into a weird perspective almost. Cause you can see like the whole amusement park when you're going through all these rides, but you see them in very weird ways. Like you saw them at the top of the hill, but you didn't really realize them because you were so focused on getting to the top of the hill. But now that you're going down the hill and going super, super fast, you're seeing the amusement park, i.e. your life in this analogy, in very, very fast and weird, odd ways. And then you get to the end when you get older and you're just like, well, I've done what I need to do. I'm ready to go home. And it's almost like you've been on the roller coaster for too long and you've gone up and down it and you've gone through the hills and you kind of just know what's going on. And you're like, well, I don't need to see the amusement park anymore type of thing. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like if you could put an emotion to the feelings of being young, being in the middle of your life. And then towards the end, it's like time changes like a wave, or at least how it feels. I don't know. The other thing I've been thinking about too, given with the perspective of things is as a medium, I get perspectives of other souls from readings, whether that be like one time I felt in a blip when I was talking to the soul of a woman and her daughter who was alive. I felt in a blip by the soul of this woman, what like years and years and years of marriage felt like. And I know that sounds preposterous to say, but it was one of the most enlightening and like perspective giving gracious things that a soul could have given me, because that was before I was married to my husband and we were talking about just our differences in spirituality and where I wanted my life to go versus how he wanted his life to go and how that was going to meet. And I just was thinking about marriage and what it would be like to be with someone for that long. And it was interesting because, you know, a lot of people say thank you to me as a medium when I give them readings for the giving them the ability to communicate with those who have moved on, who are in heaven. But I always say thank you because without meeting you and then the person that you are wanting to talk to in heaven, you guys give me so many gifts of just perspective and understanding that you can only really get from talking to another person. And you can get these things from talking to a person that's alive. It's just that in this scenario, to make it more relatable to you who's listening, have you ever had a conversation with an older person and they just are able to explain something or a time of their life that makes you feel like you just are like given a gift of a story because they convey so well what a portion of their life or an event was like. And you're like, wow, I feel like I feel it. That is what souls give to me. They just don't do it in words. They do it with my psychic abilities. And one of the other things that goes into that is pets. I had a pet the other day, a couple weeks ago, I guess, who had passed, and he lived a pretty good life, like decently long, like into his teens. And for me, someone who's had big dogs and dogs that have just passed from like accidents, my life, like almost my whole life. I've had one dog who lived to be like 12. That was the oldest I've ever had one of my bigger dogs live. Otherwise, accidents or cancers have taken them, in my eyes, too young. But I was talking to this person and I was talking to their dog, and their dog lived to be in their teens. But their owner, rightfully so, just felt like they were taken from them so early and that they could have lived such a long life or a longer life. But the feeling the soul of this dog gave me was, no, that was my life. That was the whole of my life. And I lived it to be so fulfilling and not like so fulfilling because you were my owner, because this was my life. And I don't have regrets about it because I lived a full life. And it's so, I was thinking about the perception of how we as people, beings or animals, technically, that live a certain life expectancy, right? So you can say anywhere from like 60 to 80 years old or longer if we're lucky. But animals who live a normal life, their life expectancies based on size and breed, et cetera, could be anywhere from like 6 to 15 or 16 or 18 or 20 years of life. But we, since our lives are technically, we live longer, perceive that their life, which just is in ratio to their life, I guess, we see it as being shorter. But I just, how do I explain this? Their lives, or the way that they feel or experience time, is congruent to perhaps how we perceive time and our lifespan as well. So just because their life may seem shorter in comparison to ours does not negate from how they experience the feeling of time and the fulfillment of their lives. So this is just something I've been thinking about because I had that reading with the dog that was in heaven and how he just made me feel that his life was fine, even though technically it's shorter than ours. But I don't know. What do you guys think about time? Am I just rambling? Probably. I just, that is something that's been on my mind. Just with Oak growing up so fast and my husband and I being together for almost a decade, it's going to be our 2-year wedding anniversary in October. It just, time seems like it feels different. And that's what I wanted to talk about. So given that, let's talk about time in a different way with the Mandela effect.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
Okay, so I wrote notes down again, which could be good or it could be bad. We'll see how it goes. But I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just going to do it because I'm like worried about how I'm going to be able to show up for this podcast in like a organized and professional way. But I honestly don't think that I have the time to be as organized as I would like to be. So I'm trying to be professional about being disorganized. Does that make up for it? Anyways, all right, let's first talk about the Mandela effect before I get into our listener's story that we are just going to talk about and not give answers to because I don't know if there's an answer, truly and honestly. So the Mandela effect is a social phenomena in which a group of people incorrectly remember very specific details about a person, place, situation, or event as if it were reality. And this term, the Mandela effect, was coined by paranormal researcher Fiona Broom in 2009 after sharing she had a clear memory of Nelson Mandela, the former South African president, dying while in prison in the 1980s. But in fact, in reality, he served for 30 years as the president, elected president of South Africa post-apartheid and didn't die until 2013. So many others online believed that Nelson Mandela had died in the 1980s, but this wasn't true. So let's talk about how that could possibly happen. Like, what do I want to follow this up with? I don't know. Let's follow this with some ideas that you probably have already heard of the Mandela effect. I'm sorry. I have like my phone here to do things, and I have my notebook here to do things, and it just keeps making sounds on everything. I need like a music stand separate of everything so that you don't hear me jostling. But anyways, jostling aside. Okay, so some of the things that you probably have heard of in pop culture regarding the Mandela effect, and a lot of people perceive in the metaphysical spiritual community that the Mandela effect is actually when people physically switch timelines, right? So like you have switched a timeline physically. So how do I wrap our brains around this? So I have talked about how I don't believe that parallel realities exist in the sense of that we can physically change from one alternate reality to another. That is my current opinion on the theory of alternate realities and timelines. I think that what people perceive as alternate timelines and realities are actually the choices that you have in order to get to an end. So say I've used my cat Gatsby and his adoption into my family as a choice of not necessarily an alternate reality, but timelines. So I always thought that I would have this cat, and it wasn't until 4 years later that I adopted him. And people could say, well, there's alternate realities where you adopted him first, like 4 years ago, or you adopted him 2 years ago or 3 years ago, or you've just chosen the reality that you're in now. So some people are like, okay, well, you can just jump to the reality where you adopted him, or I adopted Gatsby the first year my grandmother died. But I don't think that that's possible. And if it is, I don't have a rational explanation for it. So therefore, I'm sticking with the idea that my spirit guides have shown me and that I can conceptualize of that the way people perceive alternate realities is not necessarily that we jump there or are able to physically manifest in them, but there are options that people perceive psychically as a, this is how you can get to an end game no matter what. So like, we'll talk more about this later. But I do think that alternate realities can exist. I just don't think that we can like jump into them and be a part of them. Does that make sense? Which would not be able to explain how people are like, I actually physically had this happen to me, so how does this explain it? Dude, I don't know. I really don't. I don't know. That's why I told you guys at the beginning of this podcast, I'm not here to give you answers. I'm just here to give you my opinions and the things that I can understand right now. So hang on tight for that one. But I believe alternate realities can exist. So maybe there is a reality in which Nelson Mandela died in the 80s in prison or something like that during his like 24-year long sentence or whatever. But I believe that can physically be possible based on the fact that when the Big Bang took place, there were these things called quantum fluctuations, which created like reverberations of the universe that we're in now. So imagine Earth, but a little bit different, kind of like genetic differences that you have in cells. They look the same, but because one of them is a little bit different, there's like a weird phenotype that ends up like being odd. Kind of like, it's just like kids, like you have siblings, right? My brother and I, we look like we could be twins. But then my husband and his sister, they don't look like they could be twins, but they look like they're definitely related. So imagine in the grand scheme of being able to conceptualize or compare quantum fluctuations to children being born. Quantum fluctuations are like the slight differences that are between offspring. So imagine there is an Earth, the Earth that we're living on, but because of quantum fluctuations that happened after the Big Bang, there could be an Earth like this, but a little different, like Rick and Morty style. So I do believe that is possible. I just do not understand and cannot conceptualize as a person or as a medium how we could be able to physically change timelines like that. And I don't know. I went downstairs a little bit earlier to check on my son and talk to my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law who are downstairs right now, just like watching Oak for me. And I was telling Aiden, my brother-in-law, how I believe that a different reality can exist physically. And he's like, well, yeah, but that's because we're not fourth dimensional beings. But if we're fourth dimensional, then we'd be able to travel to the alternate realities. And I was like, what? He goes, my farts are fourth dimensional. He's 17, by the way. So the conversation ended there. I don't know. If you're not a fart that's fourth dimensional, then I don't think that you could go to another reality. But I'm also going to tell you this listener story, which makes me just second guess everything that I'm saying right now. So again, I don't have an answer, but let's talk about some of the examples of the Mandela effect that you might have experienced or heard people completely just like fight over on the internet. So there's Looney Tunes versus Looney Tunes. So tunes as in like the things you hear spelled and tunes as in like cartoons. So it says the animated series produced by Warner Brothers and starring iconic characters like Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, and Elmer Fudd was never named Looney Tunes with two O's. It was always tunes, T-U-N-E-S, as in the things you hear, right? I didn't know about that one. Then there's also the I am your father from Star Wars. So it says Jedis on both sides of the force might occasionally be compelled to agree, but everyone remembers this incorrectly. So this is something that blows my mind because I have always heard people quote and say, Luke, I am your father. But I guess when Darth Vader cuts off Luke Skywalker's hand in that one Star Wars movie, The Empire Strikes Back, he doesn't say at all, Luke, I am your father. So then like, why are we all saying that? Maybe it's just something that all the people in the 70s that were just like all jammed out on Star Wars, they were like, this is what he has to say, right? You know, like when you finish sentences in your head, but no one actually talks because like everyone knew at that point that Anakin was Darth Vader and was Luke Skywalker's dad. So like you just know that he's your father. So everyone's just like, Luke, I am your father. I don't know. I can't explain that one either. This one I've heard a lot. The Berenstain Bears or Berenstein Bears. So maybe it's the cursive font choice that threw people for a loop. But most people who grew up with this childhood story collection remembers it being written the Berenstein, S-T-E-I-N, Bears. But it's actually an A, not an E, that creates the Stein. But that also wouldn't make sense to me because I would say Berenstein Bears, Berenstein, Berenstein. Everyone says Berenstein. So maybe that's why people think that it's spelled with a E instead of an A because of how everyone just pronounces it, you know? My husband always gets mad at me because I say frustrated instead of frustrated. And he's like, there's an R in there. Don't confuse me. I'm like, please stop. Maybe it's one of those things. Okay, this one I thought was really interesting was the Monopoly Man. Okay, everyone knows the Monopoly Man, right? And I would have thought the same thing, but when I looked up pictures, this little section of an article is right. It says not to be confused with Mr. Peanut of the Planters, like peanuts, but the Monopoly Man never wore a monocle. Are all of you like running to your closets right now to see if you have the Monopoly game to see if there's a monocle on the dude in the front? I guess they call him like the money bags guy or the penny man or penny bag guy. I don't know. It depends on the country that you're from, but I guess the Monopoly Man has names in different places, but he never had a monocle. He just has his top hat, which is in the money bags. So people are like, well, maybe it's because of your conception of what a rich person would be and that they have a monocle. But I don't know. I guess he doesn't have it. I also read, too, that people think that Mickey Mouse had, the suspenders in Steamboat Mickey. But the original Mickey Mouse never had suspenders, ever. And I never thought he had suspenders either. So that was a new one that I thought too. Now this one gets me. So like I said, I was downstairs talking to my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law before I came upstairs to record this. And when I told them about the Mandela effect, my sister-in-law Tessa goes, isn't that like the Fruit of the Loom stuff? The stuff with the fruit and the cornucopia? And I was like, yes, that's exactly what we're talking about. And she goes, I read that one. And I, based on my source, and I'll have the sources that I used in the description below if you want to go on your own little, like, quote unquote, cornucopia of information on the Mandela effect, you can do so using the links. But it says that despite what you recall, no Fruit of the Loom logo ever had a cornucopia. Instead, it's always been a bunch of fruit on a plain white background. So this is what my source says. But Tessa said that on the interwebs, there was a giant thing where people were like, actually, there was a time when Fruit of the Loom screwed up their manufacturing and there was cornucopias, and they just don't want you to know they screwed up a lot. And now everyone's gaslit into thinking that the Mandela effect didn't happen, but it really was just that there was like a printing era. I just need you guys to tell me if that's true. Because I want to know, you know, like, it's not far-fetched for me to believe what Tessa says, not just like, see, we're just talking about like who's right and who's wrong, but I like to go to the discount store, right? Like Marshall's, TJ Maxx, stuff like that. And my husband hates it. Bradley hates going there because he says it's too overwhelming for him, like overstimulating, which I totally get. You have to be in the right mindset to go into a store like that because it is just like going through a pile of things that's very discombobulated. And it can be very overwhelming if you're not like ready for it emotionally, physically, spiritually. And I wanted to get a welcome mat for our front door, and I was not going to pay like $50-$60 for a welcome mat. So I was like, we're going to the discount store and you're coming with me. And he's like, no, please stop. I'll never come home alive. But we went there and I found a welcome mat, and it didn't say welcome. It just said Elcom. There was no W at all. But then there was like a couple other mats that just said like, well, Om. It's just like the letters were missing. So I can assume, or I would like to think, that Tessa's right in her Mandela effect explanation for the Fruit of the Loom, that there was just like misprints and a whole bunch of people saw them, because, you know, when stuff like that happens, it's going to not just be like in this age of manufacturing a couple, it's going to be a lot and people are going to see them. And it's not like it hurts the quality of the underwear. It just makes people feel like they're crazy. But don't gaslight people, Fruit of the Loom, if that was the problem. Just be like, yeah, we had some problems. It's fine. You got nice underwear? Cool. End of the day. So the next one is the Flintstones, my father's favorite old time show. I guess people used to think that Flintstones, like the show about, you know, the cavemen people, yabba dabba doo, wasn't spelled with a T or two T's. They just thought it was Flintstones. But that doesn't make sense, because it's Flintstones, because Flint causes fire, and what was his name? Fred Flintstone worked in a rock mine. So like, that's the whole shebatle of it, the shaboodle shebangle of it. So I think it just goes under the idea of frustrated versus frustrated. People just say Flintstones instead of Flintstones, because who has time for that? That extra T really takes it out of you. Oh, and for all the Pokemon lovers, Pikachu's tail. I'm sure you've all heard of this too, because my husband and I have gone on an escapade of this Mandela effect. So I guess Pikachu, a lot of people remember him as having a black tipped tail, but Pikachu's tail has always been yellow with brown at the base. So I don't know. They say that people could have been confused of Pikachu from its pre-evolution form of Pichu, which does have black on his tail, but it's an all black tail. So I don't know, maybe our minds just move that up. And then for everyone that's, I don't know, I guess it's really not that old, but I guess Shazam, it says a 90s movie starring the comedian Sinbad in the role of a genie who grants wishes, never existed, despite the popular belief of many who've sworn they've seen it and have a VHS tape of it when they were kids. However, the explanation for this one is more likely people may be getting confused with an actual movie called Kazam that stars Shaquille O'Neal in a similar role. So I don't know. I just think that's interesting. Those are some of the Mandela effects that you got to think about. So I don't know. Leave me in the comments below if you've heard of any of these, or if there's other ones that we need to know about, because I want to know about it. I was reading, and this is in the sources below too. I think it was on Reddit, and I don't go on Reddit often because Reddit scares me. Reddit is like a portion of the internet
a portion of the internet in which I feel is way too powerful, and I just don't even want to walk into that realm because I'm just like the pleb that has no idea what they're doing and I will be struck down. But anyways, someone had an explanation for the Mandela effect of the Monopoly Man having people remembering him with a monocle, even though he never has one, because of the Powderpuff Girls. You know, the mayor from the Powderpuff Girls? That's that dude. He wears a monocle and he looks similar to the Monopoly Man. So since, you know, all of the 90s, 2000 kids are out there playing Monopoly and watching the Powderpuff Girls, that might be why a lot of us perceived him to have the monocle on his eye. Because they're both very similar in their characterization. Yeah, I'm going to go with that characterization. The way their cartoon is drawn. So I don't know, my guys. All right. Now, I did also want to talk about how we have the Mandela effect, right? It was coined by Fiona Broom in like 2009. But since then, there's been a lot of researchers that have gone on their own scientific escapades, if you will, to try and figure this out as well. And one of the hypotheses is by a woman by the name of Kendra Cherry. And in her 2017 research paper, she says they call it the misinformation effect instead of the Mandela effect, because everyone's like, the ME effect, the ME effect. Well, Kendra came in and was like, I'm going to take the acronym too, but I'm going to call it the misinformation effect. And she says, quote, the misinformation effect refers to the tendency for post-event information to interfere with the memory of the original event. Researchers have shown that the introduction of even relatively subtle information following an event can have dramatic effect on how people remember, unquote. So, like, let's talk about Nelson Mandela, the South African president for a while, former South African president, and some of the things that he said and the things that were going on during the apartheid. I'm going to say apartheid. And like how I think Fiona and so many other people during the 90s or 2000s could have thought that he had died when he didn't die until 2013. Because we're just, you know, we're not even in South Africa. And this isn't a political thing on apartheid, but the U.S. was not being cool when apartheid was happening in South Africa. We were kind of being the absolute shiznit booty people. So, yeah, those are the words I'm going to use. Shiznit booty people. And a specific quote that I have from Nelson Mandela that could have, like, okay, let's just talk about this. So Nelson Mandela was the leader of a big movement in South Africa to stop the separation that the mostly, I think it was Dutch and British control had started in the 40s, which basically was like Jim Crow segregation, but worse. It was really, really bad. And Nelson Mandela ended up being the leader of the movement that worked to first peacefully protest its separation and stopping of apartheid, which literally means to separate people, I believe. But then realized very quickly that the South African government was not going to play nice with peaceful attempts. So they just decided to fight differently, which ended in a lot of terrible, terrible things that should not have happened, but they did because people are people. But anyways, he ended up getting caught by the government and sent to jail. He was going to be in prison for life. And that happened in, I don't even remember, the 60s or 70s, something like that. I didn't plan on doing a dissertation on Nelson Mandela, but I did read a lot about it and went on like a rabbit hole while researching this. So I'm just giving you the things that I researched a few days ago. But anyways, he ended up going to jail and he was in jail for like 27 years. And I think he got out in like 1994 or 1990 and then became the president in like 1994. But he was the president of South Africa for like 30 years and worked really, really hard to stop all of the horrible racial segregation that the white politicians had invoked since like the 40s. And it was just, you know, quieter before then, but also I'm saying quieter based on the things that I read, but it wasn't until like 46 or the beginning to mid 40s that this other dude came in, this Von guy, Dutch heritage, I believe, that actually wrote into effect apartheid, which was just not the coolest move, my guy. Anyways, so Mandela was in prison for 30 years and then became the president, but he was in prison for a really long time. And before he was in prison and he was on trial, I believe, he said the following words. The idea of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunity. If it need be, it is an idea for which I am prepared to die. End quote. So, given that quote that he said before he was imprisoned, and then the fact that he was imprisoned, quote unquote, for life, and there was a lot of talk about him being hanged, like they didn't even think that he would get a prison sentence. They figured that the South African government, when they finally caught him, would just give him the death sentence. So I believe that the reason Fiona Broom and so many other people believed that Nelson Mandela had died was because of the distance put between South Africa and the United States, like news reporter wise, physically distanced, the things that were said and the way that things were probably conveyed in the media. They were like, oh yeah, he probably just died or died in prison or something like that. But because of this information and the way things were given, instead of having the full information of things, that was just the memory that was conjured into people's heads. So that is my hypothesis for this portion of the podcast. But let's move on to more ideas on how the misinformation effect, i.e. the Mandela effect, can occur and why. So it is now more known or understood that the human brain can falsify memories so well that people believe these memories to be true. There's other explanations that can be due to priming, hypnosis, misinterpretation, and when the stimulus or the thought that was first induced is changed a little bit. So like when you go through an experience, the environment around you alters how you remember what the experience was actually like. So some of these theories have been tested, and there's been like a couple different research studies that I've done. There's this one experiment called the Loftus experiment. And the question, it was, they had a whole bunch of people in a room, right? And they showed them a car crash on a screen. So just like a replay of a car crash. And they noticed that when the researchers asked people who had witnessed the car crash questions using certain words or verbiage, they would answer or recall the memory differently. For example, when they watched the car crash, they would ask people, I think it was after a certain amount of time passed, they had all the people that watched the car crash come back in. And the first time they watched the car crash, some of them asked the participants what happened when the cars hit each other. And then another segment of participants, they asked what happened when the cars smashed each other. So months and months later, or some time later, they brought the participants back in and they noticed that the majority of the participants, when asked the question, did you see broken glass? Most of them answered correctly with the experience being no, they did not actually see any broken glass, which was the correct answer. However, they did notice that there was a higher percentage of people who answered incorrectly. But the percentage of people who answered incorrectly by saying that, yes, they did see glass from the car crash, they were asked, what did you see when the cars got smashed? So when people answered correctly, it was when the researchers asked them, what did you see when the car got hit? But when people were asked, what did you see when the car got smashed? That subsection of people were more prone to say, oh yeah, there was glass in the accident, but there never was glass, even though they answered it correctly, like the first time. Isn't that weird? So like just asking a question differently can falsify someone's memory almost, or make them think that something happened. Because I'm assuming that their brain is recognizing the word smashed with something that breaks. Because when something gets smashed, like, oh, I smashed the plate. What happens when a plate gets smashed? There's pieces everywhere. Well, if a car gets smashed, you would think that there would be broken glass everywhere. But if something gets hit, there's not going to be broken glass everywhere. There's not going to be pieces of something everywhere. Like if I hit my toe on the edge of a sofa, there's not going to be pieces of my toe everywhere, hopefully. But if I smash my toe, it's probably going to be a lot worse than if I were to hit my toe. So it's just those sort of things that are, how do I say, like, conditioning someone to have their memory be altered, possibly. I'm not sure. So there's also another experiment where people in a study were given a set of words. Specifically in the example I found, these people were given the three words bed, rest, and awake. 40% of the time, people recalled hearing the word sleep, but the word sleep was never ever used. It's just that bed, rest, and awake in our brains, when we hear those words, are all filed under the name or filed under the idea of like sleeping, but they're not. I mean, you were just asked to recall the three words, but your brain was like, no, those things have to do with sleep. So one of the words has to be sleep, but it never was. Dun, dun. Mandela effect. I don't know. I'm really excited about all this. So one of the researchers said it's like a giant game of telephone. Which we talk about. We talk about unicorns, and we've talked about werewolves and a whole bunch of other things. But specifically, when I did research on the spiritual concept of unicorns, it is just a giant game of telephone that after a while, you have what actually happened, which was people seeing rhinos for the first time and never knowing what they freaking were because they weren't from that continent, describing things in a way that if you didn't physically see a rhino, people were like, ah, it's the Garkadon. It is a unicorn. So it is the Mandela effect, a giant game of telephone with our brains, but our brains are things that we can't necessarily control. That is the other thing. I love neuroscience. If I could go back to school with infinite amounts of money to get like a PhD in neuroscience, I would, but that takes a lot of money. So I shan't. But let's move on to talking about other theories. So these are some of the things that scientists have been able to kind of quantify, but you can't really quantify the brain very well. But they've just noticed the trends and given names to the trends of why the Mandela effect or the misinformation effect could be affecting people. So the first one is blending of memories. This is where original information and the misleading information presented after the fact or after someone experiences something or thinks of something or reads something get blended together in the present person's memory. So I don't know, how would this make effect? You could be like reading a recipe for a pumpkin spice latte, but someone after you read the article, say someone sent you an article and you're reading it about a pumpkin spice latte and they're like, no, I sent you a pumpkin pie recipe. You're like, oh yeah, I was reading a pumpkin pie recipe because, you know, it called for pumpkin puree and it called for nutmeg and it called for cardamom. And I guess I just forgot the fact that, you know, there was pie stuff for it. That could be a blending of memories. Now we have a replacement of memories. This is where misleading information overwrites the original memory of the event. So I don't have an explanation for that. I don't know. Maybe you actually experienced something and then someone's like, no, this is how it was. And you both were in the room and you're like, I just don't want to think that hard. Sure. Yeah, that's what it was. Just overwrites it. Now you have retrieval of memories. This one I find interesting. So this is, since misleading info is more recent in our memories, it tends to be easier to retrieve. So if you actually learned something a really, really, really long time ago, and it is still factual to this day, but then you read something that's actually misleading, like, what is, okay, there's this one thing. My sister-in-law, Tessa,
is lovely. I love her. And when I was pregnant, she was on pregnancy TikTok with me, right? But I don't think she was in the same category of pregnancy TikTok as I was. Because one day she came up to me and she's like, hey, you know that baby smell that everyone really likes? And I was like, yeah, I've heard of it, but I don't know it because I'm the youngest of my family. So I've never experienced like huffing a baby, you know? And she goes, well, I saw this TikTok today and they said that the soft spot on the top of the baby's head is actually what makes the smell of a baby. And that is actually caused, since there is no like skull over the soft spot of the head, you're actually smelling the baby's brain. And that's what makes the smell of babies smelling good. And I was like, I will respect the fact that you saw that video, thank you for sharing it with me. And then, you know, because everything's listening nowadays, I saw that video. It came up on my feed amongst all of my, like, nurses that I was following on TikTok. And I was like, oh, okay, it's some woman in her car that is just spreading misinformation to see how many people are actually going to tell everyone that they're smelling their child's brain, or she really believed it. But either way, that is not true. The smell of a baby is from something else. So what I'm saying is, imagine you already know that the smell of a baby is not caused from smelling their brain, because that's not true. But because that's the first thing that pops up into your head, and it's the first thing that like you remember, like short-term memory, not long-term memory, because it takes more energy and more effort for your brain to retrace the neurons that it has created in order to access and, what is it? What's a good word? I want to say create, but fabricate, remember a memory. It takes more neurons and like energy to remember something that has happened farther ago. Because it's like retracing your steps, you know? Your brain has to retrace its steps. And since those steps have happened farther back in time, the steps are going to be longer. The distance is going to be more. So it's easier for your brain to go, I remember this thing that I read the other day. And maybe you went along with it like Tessa did. And you're like, okay, cool. That's the information. Because your brain didn't have to work as hard to get that information, since it's a newer memory. So that's what I assume they're talking about when they say retrieval of memories. Now, the last theory that they have is called filling of memory gaps. In some cases, pertinent data from original events may have never been encoded into the memory in the first place. So when misinformation is presented, it is incorporated into the mental narrative to fill the gaps in the memory. So this would be like, you are in a social situation, right? Like, I don't know, maybe like a bank, and there's this guy that walks in and he ends up like quietly robbing the bank. You don't know. You just think it's another transaction and he walks out with a lot of money, but there was no like hubbub. So then the police come in and they're like, hey, we found you on the cameras. We know from the transaction history that you were here. So we want to interview you to see if you can identify this guy because he was at the wrong angle for the cameras, whatever. And there's no inquiry about it. So, you know, the people ask you like, did you see this guy that came in? He was supposedly looked like this, this or that. And you're like, you originally, since you never actually noticed the person, they were just in the background, you don't know those things. But since they were asked to you in that sort of questioning manner of, did you see this person to the right of you at counter number 3? Did they have this type of hair color or that type of jacket? Did you notice the teller that they were talking to had curly hair? And you're like, oh yeah, yeah, I definitely did. That would be maybe a example of filling of memory gaps. It's just because someone gives you the information after the fact and you're like, oh yeah, that's my memory. But you actually just didn't have that information. And now you're like, I can use it to fill in the gaps of my memory. So I don't know. I just think all of this stuff is really interesting and super cool. Like another example would be like, imagine you are on your way home from work and you see a car accident. And you're like, man. And then like the next day or that evening, you hear on the news that the driver involved, or one of the drivers in that car accident involved, was actually speeding. So then
someone comes and investigates you and tries to get your eyewitness account. And you're like, oh yeah, they were definitely speeding. But that wasn't something you thought of when you were driving home. You're just like, oh, there's a car accident. I hope everyone's okay. So these are just things that I wanted to talk to you about the Mandela effect. Do you think that we can like change into alternate timelines and alternate realities? I don't know how I feel about it. We need to talk about this lovely person's listener story next. Cause I don't have an answer for it. I also want to share though too that I did have my own sort of like, what is it? My own sort of experience with quote unquote the Mandela effect and or alternate timelines, but based on the outcome of it is one of the reasons why you could understand my opinion of how I don't think people can actually switch timelines or anything like that. But then the listener story I'm going to tell you absolutely blows it out of the water. So anyways, the first time Em and I went to the Conjuring house, we went with our team and it was great. It was fantastic. We got this little tiny rental car to take all the way to like, where is it? Connecticut. And I remember like, you know, when you're in rental cars, always from different states, I swear to Fadoodle. I don't know. I swear that our license plate said like Pennsylvania on it. And I'm like, okay. And I remember that when we got to the Conjuring house and it was still broad daylight, I mean, we'd been driving for a really long time too. And we had only gotten a little bit of sleep before we were going to go into the Conjuring house and do the investigation. And I just remember going back into the Conjuring house after getting things out of the trunk of their rental car and looking at the license plate. And it said like Nevada. And I was like, I swear that said Pennsylvania. Like I have gotten out of the car multiple times to clean the bugs off the windshield and put gas in it to know that it was Pennsylvania. I swear it was Pennsylvania. And I told Em, I was like, Em, do you remember the license plate saying Pennsylvania or Nevada? And I don't remember which state it was. I just know that it was different. And she was like, no, I'm pretty sure it was this one. And I think we talk about this story too in one of the past podcasts. I just forget which one, probably one of the Conjuring House podcasts. But just if you're a new listener, I'm going to tell you the short and curly of it. So she's like, no, I think it was this. And I was like, I don't know. It's weird. It's giving me vibes. We're at the Conjuring House. I'm all freaked out. And she's like, nah, I don't know. And I don't remember if it was right then or a couple weeks later, or like time had passed and we'd already come back from the Conjuring house. And she told me, she's like, you know, I think we actually like switched timelines. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? She's like, well, that's why the license plate would be different. Because if we switch timelines, then the license plate would tell you that we're in a different timeline. And I think we switched timelines because X, Y, and Z will happen. And I was like, you think X, Y, and Z is going to happen? And we switch timelines? She's like, yeah, I definitely do. Well, I love M, but X, Y, and Z did not happen. So I think now that we did not switch timelines, I think I was just exhausted and think that the license plates, I think I just thought the license plate were different. I don't know. I don't know. I was like, if X, Y, and Z does happen, then we're definitely switching timelines and I can get behind this. Like I need to experience this in order to feel like it's real, right? And it didn't happen. So I'm like, the skepticism of timelines continues. And now, since then, like months and months and months, I think it's been like a year and a half after that experience, my spirit guides showed me, to the best of my understanding, that timeline jumping is just what we perceived originally as timeline jumping was just the options that we have. So that was my physical encounter with timeline jumping that I thought could have actually been like the Mandela effect or something, but I don't think it was. I think it was just me being tired maybe, but I don't know. Let's get into JG's story, because JG's story is a rock solid one, and it also had me thinking that the Mandela effect was happening to me when I was reading it. So let's get into that. Okay, so I want to preface this with I read August 28th, 2024's submission of JD's story to us. And if you would like to submit a spooky paranormal story that could be featured in a future podcast or YouTube video, please go down to the link below in the description and click on it. It says, submit your spooky paranormal story here. You can click that link. It'll take you to our website and you can type in your story in the box. And I will hopefully read it and put it on a future episode. And if not, it'll be on Patreon at some point for everyone to read as an exclusive of Patreon. But I was reading JD's August 27th, 2024 listener story the other day when I was figuring out what podcast I wanted to try and do next to. And I was like, I feel like I've read this story before. And the title of their story was crazy. It was like, a funeral that I went to 30 years apart. And I'm just like, I started reading it. I'm like, I've read this story before. Is this a Mandela effect? Like, I feel like this can't be the first time they've sent this story in. Cause it, like, the meat and potatoes, the core center of the story seems right, but the details are a little bit different. And I just like, they're more like detailed details. Whereas I feel like the first time I read this, it was more of just like the overarching theme of the story. And I was like freaked out. I was like, wait, did we actually jump timelines? Was Emily right? Did we jump timelines when we went to the Conjuring House the first time? I honestly had a panic attack the other day. So I typed in our platform to organize things for work. And I typed in keywords that I thought would bring up what I thought I'd already read, right? As a listener story. And I did. I found it. JD, thank you for sending in this story. But you sent in this story and it's kind of eerie too. I'm not going to lie. It freaks me out a little bit, but I do feel better knowing that I did not switch timelines. I did just actually read this story and it was worded a little bit differently because I think you just rewrote it and sent it in a couple days ago or like a month ago. but you sent it in 2 years ago on August 27th, 2022, right? I was like, I was having a heart attack, guys. I 100% was like, oh, we're in the Matrix. Everything's a lie. But I found it. And you titled JD the story, the title a little bit differently when you sent it in 2022. So I just was like, I don't know. Did you just like, maybe you could email me or send me something that tells me like, why did you think about sending in this story again? Do you remember sending it in 2022? Or like, I was thinking maybe you got like a push notification because there's notifications in Gmail now or like your email accounts. It's like, you sent this email 4 days ago. Do you want to follow up with it? Did you just like get a follow-up email like almost a day before the day that you sent it 2 years ago? And then just, I don't know. Anyways, that was my oh poop moment like 2 days ago when I was reading their story. But I'm going to read to you JG's 2022 email version of the story they titled Attending a Funeral 30 Years Apart. JG says, so my mother was a medium while she was alive. I was also clairvoyant, clairaudient as a child from a small child, like 12 years old. I would see dead people, and when I covered my eyes, I would hear them too. I used to wake up screaming because skulls would protrude from my bedroom wall. So my mom set up crystals around the house to stop the spooks from getting to me and my brother. She had a side hustle of doing readings behind my Catholic father's back. Side note. One of my childhood friend's parents were friends of hers, so we would hang out after school at his place until I changed schools. Then, one day, my mother said to me that M, my father's friend, had died. I was like 11 years old, and she thought my little brother was too young to understand, so she took me because their older son was my best friend. She wanted me there for him, someone his own age. We were seated in the church in the middle of the friend's side of the church and the coffin was closed, but even just looking at it, that side of the church was dark and it felt empty and I could feel more energy coming in behind us. So I turned around and watched the people coming into the church. Suddenly, I saw a man enter. He looked exactly like my best friend's father, M. His complexion was yellow, his face was gone, and his eyes had bags under them, and his hair was going from blonde to gray. I turned to my mother and went, "Does M have a twin brother?" She stopped and looked at me and went, "No, why?" I said, "Because he just walked in and is taking a seat at the back of the church against the wall." My mom said to me, "Turn around. I'll explain everything later." I didn't want to turn around because the energy and the light coming from the back of the church had better energy than that of the front. We managed to get through the service, but I kept turning around to look at M. When the service ended, he got up and walked out into the light, and then the light was gone. From what I came to understand later, he had liver cancer. The chemo had turned his hair gray. I didn't understand too much at that age, but my mom seemed happy that he had passed into the light. Either 2 months or 2 years later, sorry, foggy brain, my best friend's mother passed away too, leaving him and his brother as orphans. Their older half-sister got custody of them and moved them out of the country. I attended her funeral as well with my mother, my dad, and my brother, but there was no twin of her at the back of the church, like my friend's father. Instead, a woman who looked to be her twin sat up front near her boys, my best friend and his brother. My dad is a non-believer, so I couldn't say anything, but I also only saw the back of her head, so it really could have been anyone with crazy curly hair. My mother passed in 2010, but I felt her around for a while dictating what she thought I should give to my cousin, whom I'm despised. Arguing with your dead mother's spirit in the kitchen before taking her ashes up to the family is super fun. 10 out of 10 recommend. Anyway, 2020 rolls around and the end of the pandemic restrictions, sort of. So bigger funerals were allowed. What do I find out? My childhood bestie was back and married an old high school bestie of mine. Regardless, my dad was in contact with him when I got a phone call out of nowhere from my dad, who told me that my childhood bestie's father had died. And I instantly went, "What?" I was slammed. Like, I went out of pure curiosity to the funeral, because how does one die twice? When I got to the funeral, who do I see? His mother, my best friend's mother, alive, whose funeral I had attended as a tween. I was very confused and also happy she wasn't dead, but really, really confused. Had I remembered her funeral wrong? Had she remarried? All that stuff. So I checked Facebook, and all of it was legit. She was married 45 plus years, etc. Then, you guessed it, 2 months later, she passed away of heart issues. My dad asked me to go, and I just explained everything and how crazy I was feeling and that I couldn't go. I did not want to attend the same funeral twice in 30 years. So this is the craziest Mandela effect I have ever experienced. The only reason I remember seeing it the first time was because of witnessing M, my father's dad, cross over. But because my mother is gone, I have no one to back up my experience, and my dad is in his late 70s and his memory is shoddy that far back. So, has anyone else experienced something like this? Are there thoughts? Am I crazy, or did I slide into the Mandela effect? JD, your story freaks me out, my guy. I do not have an explanation for it. The explanation that I have is that as a medium watching M, your best friend's dad, pass into light at the back of his church makes a lot of sense. He just showed up for his funeral, which is not uncommon in the scope of paranormal, metaphysical, spiritual things as a medium perspective. And then passing over in to the light of heaven, spirit, source, creator, whatever you want to call it, is also not an uncommon thing to see. And then seeing your best friend's mom also in the funeral pews at her own funeral, sitting next to her kids, is not uncommon. My mother, when she was little, she used to go to church with her Roman Catholic grandmother, or no, Russian Orthodox grandmother. That's what it is. That was my great grandmother. Excuse me. And she would talk to the people that had attended the church in the pews, but they had died like months and years before. They were just attending church still in the afterlife, and my mom would talk to them. So that is not uncommon. However, the fact that you experienced it 30 years apart, I don't have an explanation for that. That goes against everything that I as a human can conceptualize at this time, this point in time, as a human, as a medium, as anything. So I just wanted to share all of you that information. It just, We talked about the Mandela effect first. Then we have an actual like spiritual, metaphysical, paranormal story of it. And it just like sort of blows everything out of the water. And I did read your most recent, JD, I did read your most recent one submission of this story too. And it's similar. You just gave more details that I didn't talk about today, but they're not necessarily like key details, you know, they just explain people more in depth, but not the meat and potatoes of it, which you still outlined the same. So I don't know if you would like to give your thoughts in the comments below. Let me know. You could just be like, you're a daft idiot for thinking that timelines and timeline jumping doesn't exist given this story. I am thinking the same thing, but I also cannot give you an answer that it did or did not happen. My advice to you, JD, as a professional psychic medium and as a person living on the planet reading your story, I think that you should not listen to what other people have to say and that you should do your own research and come to your own conclusions, because that's what this entire podcast is about. Not telling you what to think, but just giving you the things that I have to understand and the things that I've researched, and you form your own opinion. But I did love your story. I'm sorry that your mom passed. I cannot imagine arguing with your mom about your belongings. So many times when people make readings with me, they'll ask me about things like that. Like, what did my dad want my sister to have? Because like something in the will isn't clear, or there was no will. And it's some of the things that souls tell me are very funny. So I can only imagine when it's your own mother, how hilarious and just interesting that might be.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
So anyways, thank you all for listening. This was a... I hope you liked the podcast. I'm not going to say it was good. I hope it was good. If you're interested in a reading, I do have availability for October and the rest of September. If that's something you're interested in, you can go down to the description or the show notes below and schedule an in-person or email reading with me, whatever you would like. And until next time, I hope you continue to form your own opinions and research things and create your spiritual journey the way that you see fit. Until next time, peace. Medusa kicks!